Hello everyone, welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome to today's program Walt Heil, who is Senior Vice President at Kiwo. And today we're going to talk about myths and realities of global TMS deployment. Now, when you look at a lot of shippers that I talk to, a lot of them are, you know, the transportation operations are becoming much more global. But some of them, you know, even in this day and age, they still might be working with spreadsheets and fax machines to manage their transportation operations. In other cases, they may be working with a variety of either proprietary or a hodgepodge of third-party solutions, and they're trying to kind of stitch those together in some way to manage their operations. And some of them are kind of at that other decision point, whether they should continue to operate their operations in-house or whether they should outsource, and kind of what role does technology, you know, play in that whole decision factor. And what I find is that, you know, a lot of times as companies, as shippers are trying to make these decisions and understand what's the kind of current state of the market. In many cases, they're operating under misperceptions or myths that are out there in terms of what the current capabilities are from a transportation management standpoint and from a technology standpoint. So we're going to explore some of those myths today and understand what is myth and what is reality and how do you overcome these things. And Walt, very privileged to have him on the program, very experienced in this area, and certainly look forward to having him share his perspectives, as he's working and talking to many companies out there. Just want to remind those of you that are joining us live today that part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So if you do have a question for Walt as we're having our conversation here, you can do so via the submit a question button. And I'll keep an eye on that. If it's a good and appropriate question, I'll weave it into the conversation. So with that, Walt, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Adrian. Happy to be here.
So Walt, as a first-time guest, one of the things I always like to do before we kind of dive into the topic is really to kind of, get a sense of, how and why, you got involved in the supply chain logistics industry to begin with. So, why don't you tell us real brief, a little bit about your career path, again, how and why you got involved with supply chain logistics and what your current role and responsibilities are there at Kiwo.
Yeah, great. So a bit of an interesting or unique path, if you will. Unlike a lot of folks in the space who kind of went through either an engineering business or logistics management education, I actually graduated with a BA in political science from Michigan State University, and I went to law school. So after law school, made some life decisions, got into business. Ended up working in the international shipping industry, kind of cut my teeth in the early part of my career, working for a couple of global steamship lines, and actually ended up working for Maersk, A.P. Moller Group, for a number of years in the 90s, and then sort of transitioned in the late 90s to technology or supply chain technology. And if you recall, Adrian, back then, we used to call them transportation.com companies. There were a lot of them. So I ended up connecting with a firm out of Minneapolis, Minnesota that came to be known as Nestevo, which was one of the pioneers in that space. And then through a series of acquisitions, which, of course, as you know, in this business is very typical and common, I ended up staying with this business, this transportation management or supply chain technology business, which has taken me into Kiwo, where today I'm Senior Vice President of Sales for our transportation solutions.
Great, Walt. And I must say, I think we've done easily over 100 episodes here on Talking Logistics, and I think you're the first guest that has a law degree. So, it's always interesting to me to see the different roads and paths that people take into this industry. And I remember those dot-com days very well and the Steve-O very well as being, again, one of the early pioneers in software as a service, TMS, and, the path that has brought you over to Kiwo today. So, to kind of dive into the topic, kind of building on kind of my opening comments, although the transportation management system, systems have been around for more than two decades, and there are countless, research studies and case studies out there kind of highlighting the benefits of a TMS. Many companies still haven't, implemented one. I mean, in your experience, really now, 15 plus years probably. I mean, what, why are so many companies still on the sidelines?
I think there's multiple reasons. I obviously it's they're becoming fewer and farther between, right? There's less now than there were several years ago. I think there's a sort of a macroeconomic reason in some respects. In a lot of industries we're seeing, excuse me, a lot of consolidation. As there's a lot of consolidation M&A activity going on, projects and initiatives like this tend to take a back seat. It's not that they're not thinking about it. It's just strategically they're waiting to see what their company looks like. And if you look at industries like everything from sort of bulk commodity industries, and even in CPG, look at some of the huge CPG companies that are consolidating, but you see very few smaller or mid-sized CPG companies now because they're getting gobbled up. So I think a lot of them are just kind of waiting. They're saying, let's see what happens. Let's wait until there's a more clear landscape for our supply chain and what our business looks like. Are we going to remain regional? Are we going to be global? So I think some of those more macroeconomic implications are sort of holding companies off from doing it. And that's the most typical or common reason I see today. There really aren't a lot of good cost justifications to not do it. I think most companies sort of realize if they're manual, they need it. But priorities and sort of bigger picture influences are slowing or getting in the way of those types of investments.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I certainly see, mergers and acquisitions certainly in a variety of different industries, and that serves as both a kind of creates this layer of uncertainty, like you talked about, in terms of what's going to be the right path forward, what's going to be the right supply chain strategy, and how does transportation fit in all that, and then ultimately that gets down to the the technology decisions that go into that, and then ultimately I think M&A activity gets to a point where they have to make that decision one way or another, right? I mean, because ultimately you still have to run that business. You talked about cost, and I think maybe that's one of those areas where there might be some myths and realities associated with that. I mean, do you still find companies that view TMS as being too expensive to implement? I mean, what's the perception and reality there?
Yeah, absolutely. There's still a, call it a myth, if you will, out in the market, and probably in two sort of core areas in the market, right? So one of them would be more in the down market, sort of mid-size to down market, where there's a belief that systems, even systems that are delivered in the cloud or SaaS, I think there's still a belief or a myth that the cost to implement and support the integrations and trading partner relationships is too costly. You can't justify, or I should say they can't justify the ROI. Probably some bad information in the market. Historically, Adrian, I think you would appreciate this. A lot of the case studies and sort of ROI studies that have been out in the marketplace have tended to be have revolved around studies with large tier one shippers, whether industrial, manufacturing, CPG food. Those models, those ROI models, are very different than a mid-sized company and a smaller company, right? Those companies can absorb higher cost because the ROI in and of itself is a lot higher. The ratio tends to be a little bit different between, or I should say, the time to value and the total cost of ownership for SaaS versus on-premise. But in the mid-market, in the down market, those costs are very different. Implementation is very different. You don't have as many trading partners. Configuration tends to be more straightforward. So there needs to be sort of broader education and understanding in the mid to down market that TMS makes sense. And by the way, it can be delivered and maintained at a very reasonable cost with a fast or accelerated ROI. The last part of the question I mentioned, there's sort of two core answers to this, would be more on the global side, right? So I think there's been a perception that, hey, I'm a multinational company, I'm global. You know, there doesn't seem to be anything on the market that I could actually deploy within a reasonable cost, scope, and timeline and get value out of it, right? I'm not going to go to my CFO and CIO and senior leadership and say, hey, we have a five-year window to savings. That was really a model or a perception that was based on the traditional delivery model for TMS, which is, you know, perpetual license. You know, you buy the hardware, you invest in the capacity, internal IT support. Those days are over. There's alternatives in the market. So again, I think a legacy perception that if I'm global, there's no one system out there that I can deploy in a cost-effective way or in a timely way where I can get any value out of it. So no one was willing or no one has been willing to build the internal justification. Again, we've seen the landscape change.
Yeah, you raise a lot of good points. You know, particularly going back to kind of the you know tier one companies or very large companies versus kind of those smaller midsize you know market. I think I've seen similar types of comments from kind of the lower tier, particularly when it comes to things like you know let's say optimization. You know, because it's something that there's a lot of ROI and you know, opportunities with better optimization, but some small and mid-sized shippers say, I don't need optimization, right? Because I ship everything full truckload, or my volumes aren't big enough, or I don't have that same level of complexity. So I think that there's perhaps some, in my view, you know, some resistance perhaps to the optimization side of the equation where they may not fully understand, you know, what optimization can bring to the table on one hand, or you know, I think another good important point is that, and I think you kind of alluded to this, is that in some cases for some of these smaller mid-sized folks, the value proposition, at least initially, might be less about optimization and more about labor savings in terms of getting them away from, you know, having to manually type in things or keep up with spreadsheets or having to visit multiple carrier websites and so on and so forth. Do you see that where they, perhaps the value proposition or the business case perhaps for smaller companies might be geared more toward, let's say, labor savings as opposed to optimization savings?
So absolutely. In a more or in a less complex network, as you explained, right, the value proposition or ROI around optimization as we know it, right, optimally consolidating smaller orders and optimizing modes and complex networks, the value proposition is just isn't as strong in those smaller, less complex networks. So in those environments, right, that sort of mid-tier down market companies, the ones that we talked about earlier that don't have TMS, haven't invested in it, the ROI is very different. And again, Adrian, I kind of blame the legacy of the type of case studies and white papers that have been sort of commonly circulated in the market over the years. They really haven't hit on where that value proposition lies for those smaller companies. And it really is right there and quite straightforward. A lot of manual non-value add functions in these companies around repetitive processes that can be automated. And what I always like to tell companies is, look, how you restructure your organization or your resources around automation is up to you, right? Whether it's downsizing your staffing, right? That's one way. But really the companies that I've seen that have benefited the most are companies that have probably done a pretty good job of streamlining their resources already. And everybody's gone through cost initiatives, right? So there's not a lot of fat left in a lot of these companies in the supply chain or logistics, transportation departments. But the problem is the people that they still have on staff are doing very non-value add functions. So automating things like load tendering, freight audit and pay, right? So things like manually matching freight invoices that come in from carriers, those things can be automated, streamlined. They can be done more accurately, which, by the way, can lead to sort of hard dollar savings opportunities that can be easily identifiable. But reallocate those people to more value-add functions, right? So people in freight audit and pay, rather than manually matching freight bills, they can be tasked with managing exceptions, investigating and auditing unplanned charges. Why was my truck held up at my premier retail customer, and why am I incurring service level infringement charges for that retailer? Now I have people who can investigate that information, have good data and detail at their fingertips, and can bring quick resolution and clear the air. And those sort of value add functions tend to add to that ROI or that value proposition. You could say the same thing about things like load tendering and dispatching. Why am I calling and emailing the same carrier the same day for the same load? I need to know about the load that got held up, and I might be late delivering into, you know, my premier customer's location, and I can get ahead of it, reschedule the delivery appointment, and avoid a chargeback, right? Those are the types of things that a lot of these mid-sized shippers are tying their value proposition and justification to TMS with. Not necessarily that really kind of deep, rich, complex optimization, where quite frankly would require a big investment and probably little return.
Right. And I agree, at least in the near term. I will say, I know talking to a lot of small shippers, smaller mid-sized shippers, of course, the whole SMB market is not just one market, right? There's a lot of variety. I think all of us, like including analysts, like to lump a lot of companies into that quote unquote SMB space, but there's a lot of diversity within that space as well. And I think it doesn't take much added complexity, whether it's increase in order volumes or getting involved with parcel shipping, let's say, because of e-commerce requirements. It doesn't take that much more added complexity for optimization to actually become relevant for some of these companies, even though they may not, you know, think that might be the case.
Yeah, and by the way, you know, companies that aren't there yet, once they get a TMS foundation in place, as they grow, whether organically or inorganically, then they have the technical infrastructure in place to migrate or grow into, or I should say evolve into, a more optimized, automated environment. They might not be there today, but chances are, or it's very likely, that many of them will migrate to that. And it's better to have the foundation in place for things like execution and financials and then move into optimization rather than trying to tackle optimization right out of the chute.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've seen that as well. A lot of companies leave optimization to phase two, if you will, as part of the implementation. Unfortunately, a lot of them never get to phase two and need that, renewed business case to get to move on to that phase. Before we move away from kind of the cost questions or, you know, perceptions and realities around cost, something else you talked about in terms of, you know, software as a service. Obviously, a lot has been written about over the past decade about cloud and software as a service. And, you know, we've seen the software industry as a whole really move in this direction. But do you think, and I certainly this has been an area that I've been on the kind of bandwagon and on the soapbox for a long time, is I think a lot of companies kind of miss part of the value proposition of software as a service. So they may see, you know, they may think of software as a service as, okay, well, maybe this is a more economical way to pay for software, right? So we don't, you know, we pay it on a subscription basis versus a big upfront license fee. And maybe we don't need the hardware behind our four walls, so we don't have to invest in that. But they might still think, well, you know, I still got to connect via carriers and everything else. So they kind of miss the network aspect of it, in terms of the fact that, particularly with a transportation management system in a SaaS model, you're not only getting software functionality, you're also getting access to a network of carriers, suppliers, and other trading partners. Do you see that as, you know, something that more education needs to be done in that area, where perhaps some companies just don't see that aspect or that side of the value proposition around software as a service?
Without question. So software as a service is really a deployment strategy. It's not just a commercial vehicle for buying software. You couldn't be more right. So, and what I mean by that is, if you think about transportation, supply chain networks, you know, whether you're somewhat basic or extraordinarily complex and global, you are ultra dependent on trading partner collaboration, right? Whether it's your material or inventory suppliers, your asset-based logistics providers, non-asset-based providers. Think about all of the dependencies that your network has with third-party providers and suppliers. A traditional software model, perpetual license model behind the firewall, still requires you to connect to those carriers or trading partners. Traditionally, to do that, you had to take on an entirely separate and independent B2B project to connect those trading partners to the platform that you're installing and maintaining behind your firewall. So you're only getting halfway there, if that, right? It depends. You could argue that it's not even halfway there. You made the comment earlier about, companies never getting to stage two of a project. Sometimes that's the reason why. And it's typically cost that's not recognized or acknowledged in the initial phases of the project. With the SaaS model or a SaaS deployment strategy, that trading partner connectivity inherently comes with the network model, right? So the connectivity to either your existing trading partners or a very standard, scalable, configurable way to connect new trading partners enables that extension of your network outside of your own four walls. And by the way, it's part of that subscription vehicle, right? So if I sort of weave or dovetail back to the commercial comment I made before, that cost is built into the proposition. So less unknowns, less hidden costs, less long-term cost hurdles that you might have to be confronted with internally with the traditional software model. With the SaaS model, it's sort of full transparency right from the beginning of the project. And with that trading partner connectivity, you can then more easily scale and roll out other regions, locations, business units. And think about acquisitions, right? We talked about consolidation before, Adrian. You bring on a new business unit. Having to tackle an entirely independent B2B project to connect those providers for that business is extraordinarily costly. In a SaaS model, it's typically a pretty straightforward configuration exercise to get those trading partners connected to the same platform because you don't have the liabilities of maintaining and managing those extensions from your own IT infrastructure.
No, absolutely. I mean, I've been a long time proponent of the network-based model for just that. And I continue to, when I give talks, I continue to talk about, where will you find supply chain innovation? And I talk about it at the intersection of software, B2B connectivity, and social networking. I think social networking is still in the very, very, very early adopter stage when it comes to supply chain logistics. But I think it's a combination of those three things that provide some powerful, network effects, if you will, and opportunities. And you see that clearly in transportation. Let me go back to, you kind of alluded to, so let's move away from cost now and talk about kind of the scope of TMS solutions, particularly, like I said, a lot of companies are becoming much more global in nature right now, whether their operations are becoming, the transportation operations are becoming more global, or they're just global in multinational companies that have operations in multiple countries. I mean, do you find that many companies still view TMS as being a kind of a applicable only for domestic solutions, domestic transportation operations versus, global? So they kind of say, well, a TMS, I'm global, but a TMS is really only for truckload and LTL.
Yeah, without question. The global TMS is really, I would consider, a new frontier. Very few companies have had the resources. When I say companies, I'm talking primarily shippers or maybe, large global retailers, have sort of the resources and the sort of the IT wherewithal or bandwidth to tackle a single platform global initiative for transportation. Even those companies, when embarking on that journey, have found that it doesn't work because of a lot of those external dependencies that you and I were just talking about with trading partner collaboration. Plus, right, you make another good point, Adrian. You know, my EMEA business unit is entrenched in a certain technology or culture, or maybe outsourced third-party providers. My Americas business is invested in a over-the-road domestic TMS. So you have that mix, and you have a sort of a political quandary to get anybody to take control or leadership or ownership globally of an initiative. With SaaS, right, with this deployment model, logically, you'd think that, right, hey, this makes a lot of sense. Let's use this deployment model, or look to a vendor that has this deployment model to go and spread this type of strategy across my global enterprise. The challenge has been, until recently, SaaS TMS providers have really struggled with providing a truly global offering. A lot of it has to do with localization, right? Localization isn't easy. Whether you go from Europe to the Americas to Latin America to APAC, there's all sorts of very specific, unique requirements. You name it, whether they're sort of tactical, operational, to more strategic, everything from green initiatives to local governmental requirements. So my point is, we're just starting to enter a time where in the market, some of the SaaS providers are offering platforms that satisfy many, if not most, of those localized requirements. I would be careful to tell you that, you know, I don't think anyone has it all figured out. But again, you're talking about configuration, not customization, right, with SaaS. So in order to deploy a SaaS solution globally, those solutions have to have enough of that coverage to give a company enough comfort and, you know, reduce the risk for them to rely on a SaaS solution at a global level. We're getting there. We're getting very close, I should say.
That's a great point. And, you know, we did an episode recently, and I wrote a blog post afterwards where I'm blanking on the exact title, but it was something about, you know, the truth about global transportation. You know, it happens locally, right? And because you do have, like you mentioned, you know, the operating realities of transportation in Germany are very different than the operation realities in Japan, and very different than they are here in the United States, right? So, you know, being able to, on the one hand, meet the requirements there at the on the ground operationally in different countries and different geographic regions is one thing, but at the end of the day, you want to be able to roll all that information up, because, you know, the VP of transportation needs to answer those basic questions of, you know, how much are we spending on transportation globally? How are we doing on service globally? And I think that's where kind of the SaaS platform, you know, arguably, you know, being able to provide, you know, provide that on a single, you know, provide the visibility to those questions on service and cost and other factors, is kind of the goal that many shippers have, right?
So I think you just hit on the biggest driver right now in the market, and it is companies want to understand their costs. They want to understand how they're touching their customers, how they're interacting with their suppliers. They can't afford to do it regionally anymore, because in a regional environment, they really have no way to connect everything into a single platform of consumable data. So if you roll out a global network on a, say, a SaaS platform for transportation, and you can connect your procurement relationships with suppliers and the cost all the way through your network to your customer, and tie that data back to a single platform to then drive real business intelligence in transportation from a global perspective, that's the big win. That's where companies are getting really excited, because then they can take a much closer and harder look at where they can drive costs out of their supply chain, where their inefficiencies are. Doing it regionally and relying on other third parties to provide that data doesn't give them a very consumable platform to do that. Adrian, I think you just kind of hit on where the biggest driver is today for global TMS. And to do it in an economical environment or platform, SaaS or cloud, multi-tenant SaaS is really the way to do it.
So let me, you know, along that point, because when you look at companies that are operating globally, you know, they're managing the transportation globally, you know, many of them are working with 3PLs in some cases. You know, and sometimes, like I mentioned in my opening comments, you know, the decision to implement a TMS, particularly a global TMS, or not, is sometimes coupled with another decision, right? Which is, you know, do we continue to keep transportation in-house or do we outsource, you know, a part of it to a third party? I mean, are there any myths or misperceptions that factor into, you know, the outsourcing option, and how does technology fit into that?
I think there are myths. So I think the myth is that if you want to do this globally with your own solution, you have to consume everything. When I say consume, I mean you have to take on all of the operational functions yourself. And that's not true. You know, if you're outsourcing to third-party providers in certain markets or within certain business units, third-party providers can interact with a multi-tenant cloud platform just like a, you know, directly contracted asset-based carrier or trading partner. There's really no difference. Really, where the change management has to take place, the process change, is in your business relationship, your commercial relationship with an outsourced third-party provider. You know, you need that provider to maybe provide bodies in a certain location to actually run your transportation department. The difference now is if you're using them and they're providing you services, they have either assets or they go out and contract assets, so they're maybe acting as a third-party intermediary or brokerage. As long as you can get that data from that provider, from that 3PL, into the platform, and that data can then be consumed in the same way that data comes from a directly contracted third-party carrier or an NVO or whoever it might be, then there's really no difference. So the myth is that you have to bring everything in-house to achieve your objectives or goals with a global TMS. Absolutely not true. The SaaS multi-tenant platform or environment really gives you those extensions to connect those third-party providers. Let them continue to give you those services that you absolutely need, right? You don't want to take on those costs, but what you haven't been able to get from them is the information and data in a single platform to be able to view, consume, understand, and analyze like I talked about before. So absolutely one of the biggest myths and probably one of the biggest reasons why companies are reluctant to seriously consider a strategy like this.
Yeah, no, interesting. I think you touched upon something that I wrote about a lot last year, and it was actually one of my predictions for 2016. You know, talking about the role of logistics service providers, and you know, in many cases when I talk to shippers, they're looking to their third-party logistics providers. In some cases as a source of technology, but I think if you peel back the onion, more than anything else is, you know, a source of business intelligence and information, right? Because they want to be able to understand those aspects of the transportation logistics operations that third parties are managing on their behalf, but be able to bring that data in to other data that they may have internally in terms of demand, in terms of, sales and so on and so forth, so they can do that holistic integrated, you know, business intelligence and analytics. So I think you kind of underscored some of those points as well. You know, we're running short on time here, so I just got a couple of other questions. You know, maybe to you know, bring it home a little bit. I mean, can you share with us some case studies or customer examples that help kind of show, you know, how these myths are just that, myths?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as I said before, this is becoming a reality. We work with several companies that have been able to transition and really achieve successfully their goals around global transportation. Let me give you a really quick example, Adrian. We work closely with a very large multinational specialty chemical company. They're actually a European-based company based out of France. Now, giving them credit, they've understood and known that what the value of global TMS is. Unfortunately, they ended up going about it the wrong way, but were able to quickly pivot to the right, what I would consider to be the right delivery model, and have wrapped that into or transitioned that into a very successful project. Long story short is, they went into a significant initiative to roll out global transportation management for their large facilities across the Americas, EMEA, and even APAC. They initially embarked on an ERP-based strategy, so an on-premise enterprise license strategy behind their firewall. What they found was, with all those complexities that we talked about before, from region to region, and the requirement to actually connect the trading partners from region to region in a non-replicable format, right? So you got to work with one carrier in the Americas, set them up, and do it a very different type of integration, maybe with the same national carrier, but with their European entity. The costs really spun out of control. So they took a step back after about a year and a half into the project. Assessed where they were and came to a very quick conclusion that they weren't going to get to where they needed to be from a timing perspective and within reasonable budget constraints. They quickly pivoted to Keywill to leverage the SaaS multi-tenant transportation management platform to be able to more quickly accelerate this project. And really, that acceleration was built around two core areas. Number one was getting those global transportation providers, the LSPs, connected, whether they're ocean carriers, NVOCCs, asset-based over-the-road carriers, specialty carriers, and even the railroads, to be able to get those providers connected and at the same time work with Keywill to configure the needed and necessary localized requirements from EMEA to APAC throughout the Americas. The project then kicked off. Those requirements were laid out. We attacked those requirements with them. Within a year, less than a year, they were able to roll out all of their major facilities in the United States and EMEA. And then at the end of the first year, the initiation of their locations in Asia Pacific. So today, all three of those regions are live on the system. And most importantly, as we talked about before, they have one central platform that they access and utilize for not only planning and control, right? Planning and execution and even settlement of their global transportation activity, but they have all of the data in one single repository. So there's essentially one point of truth for all their transportation data, where today, they either bring that data back in and mix it with, sales data, customer data, financial data to enhance their corporate analytics strategy. But they're also generating things like total landed cost, which they were never able to do before. And they're better able to analyze and scorecard global carriers, which before they couldn't do because they relied on a lot of third parties that they just couldn't get the accurate data from. So I think that's a good example of a company that tried the enterprise on-premise strategy for, what I would consider to be obvious reasons. It didn't work. Instead of scuttling the entire project and going back to a more manual, regional or localized strategy, there was an option in the market for them to leverage and utilize to achieve their goals. And they did it successfully.
Yeah, I think it's a great example. Going back to what we talked about earlier, where it seemed like, one of the Achilles heel, if you will, of their approach, initial approach, was the B2B connectivity piece of it. That was a key area that, going back to what we talked about before, it's one of those hidden areas of cost and complexity that a lot of companies kind of overlook when they're looking at a TMS, right? They may look at the software features and functions in terms of, can it do tendering? Can it do optimization? Can it do this and that from a software standpoint? But they kind of overlook the complexity and the cost involved with integrating, carriers and trading partners that's a critical aspect of managing, the end-to-end operation. I think the reality there too is that a lot of companies overlook is that that's an ongoing endeavor and cost factor, right? Because you're always bringing in new carriers and new trading partners and everything else. So it's not a it's something that you're done. You do it once and you're done. It's an ongoing aspect of it. While we're out of time here, so I'm just going to go right to my last question. As a way to wrap up, I mean, what advice would you give to companies to help them, separate the myths from realities when it comes to global TMS deployment?
Yeah, great question. I think the first thing companies need to do is take a step back and understand and realize that there is a viable deployment model in the market that probably wasn't reasonable to explore in the past, right? This is a relatively new phenomenon, Adrian. This is in the last couple of years, right? So many, companies that have looked at this years ago and did their analysis and came to the conclusion that it was too costly, too risky, too expansive, understand that the landscape has changed without question. The other thing to consider and understand is really what are your core objectives and goals? You don't have to roll everything out at once. If you have a regional TMS systems, localized relationships with third parties, a global TMS can be a gradual process. The key is to get that, as you pointed out earlier, get that connectivity established. Get it established with those third-party providers, the carriers that you own the relationships with. And by the way, if you do have local TMS systems and markets, those local systems can also be part of this system, part of this platform, at least for a period of time, right? You don't have to, for a lack of a better way to put it, you don't have to rip the Band-Aid off right away. You can approach this very intelligently with the idea of keeping risk at a minimum. But ultimately, with the deployment models in place today, that being SaaS multi-tenant, there's absolutely a much lower risk, viable alternative in the market to achieve your goals. And then the last point, Adrian, as I talked about before, think about what you want to get out of it. Often companies put together these strategies based on very localized sort of tactical objectives, right? I want to automate these functions here. I want to do better load planning or carrier selection in this market. Think about the bigger picture. If it's a global TMS platform, think about what I talked about earlier. Think about what is the value to the company to have access to end-to-end transportation data, all the way down to the SKU level. What does that mean to your company? What type of benefits are you going to be able to get out of that type of environment or that type of access to your data? And what does that mean to finance? What does that mean to global operations? That could tell a company or influence a company's decision to go into a market, to stay in a market. Where to source inventory from? Do I work with the right suppliers? So it can really open up a lot of other opportunities. So my point is, don't look at the decision in a siloed, traditional sort of tactical and operational way. Look at it more strategically. Look at it from a more high level. Look at how the benefits can translate to finance, sourcing, global sales, all those other stakeholders in the business. How will this benefit them, not just transportation?
Great words of advice there, Walt. And like I always say at the end of every episode, we always just manage to scratch the surface on these topics, but I think we hit on a lot of key important points here, and you provided some good food for thought and ideas. So thank you very much for making the time to be with us today.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
We didn't get any questions live today, but if you are watching today's episode on demand, and you do have a question or a comment for Walt, you can find this episode on talkinglogistics.com, and you can post your question or comment there. And I'm sure that Walt will be more than happy to respond via that medium. So again, thank you all for joining us today, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.